EcoReport is a weekly public affairs program
providing independent media coverage
of environmental and ecological studies
with a focus on local, state, and regional people, issues, and events
in order to foster open discussion
of human relationships with nature and the earth
and to encourage you to take personal responsibility for living sustainably in the world.
EcoReport is produced by an independent team of volunteers
working at the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
And financially supported by listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to EcoReport. For WFHB, I'm Linda Leitner.
And I'm Glenn Leitner. Two local organizations and a Bloomington resident are being commended for their environmental sustainability efforts. Climate activist and solar energy champion Mady Hirschland was given an award for individual sustainability efforts. Jeff Meese and Lenny Bush of One World Enterprises were awarded the Business Sustainability Award. Meese said he and his staff will be increasing their efforts over the next 10 years.
Has a huge role to play in these issues. I'm not of the camp that thinks that business can govern itself when it comes to waste. We've got to make rules. We've got to get business to slide into them because to me there's no bigger role for government at all levels to play than to protect this stuff that belongs to all of us, the water, the air, these kind of things. And I realize it takes a lot of guts. And it's hard, and I don't think we do it with a little plastic bag ban or a straw ban or whatever. These are things that businesses can kind of set an example on.
The Center for Sustainable Living took the nonprofit award. White said the organization facilitated the creation of the Bloomington Winters Farmers Market, the Community Bike Project, and the Renewable Energy Network Siren.
With over 20 years of community building experience, CSL also has committed to improving long-term environmental impacts through the Bring Your Bag Bloomington initiative, which aims to eliminate or put a fee on single-use plastic bags and by facilitating the city's Solarize effort, which significantly increased the number of solar installations in Bloomington. CSL promotes access to healthy food for all people, sharing skills and knowledge through Simply Living Fairs, the Grow Organic Educator Series, and ShareFest. The organization also promotes the development of a local solidarity economy through the Glenn Carter Memorial Toolshare, seed libraries, free workshops for making rain barrels, and by starting Bloomington's first local currency, Blooming Hours. In an effort to build awareness about the harmful environmental effects of the fashion industry and general culture of waste and disposables, CSL organized the Trashin' Refashion Runway Show. Also thanks to CSL, Bloomington was designated a wildlife habitat city after members organized the Backyard Wildlife Habitat Stewards class, promoting the need to increase wildlife habitat spaces.
White said, in addition to highlighting the efforts of the awardees, the Sustainability Commission hopes they'll be seen as role models by the community. She also noted the awards themselves are made of 100% recycled materials. In other news, Monroe County officials are debating the creation of an intermediate processing facility, or IPF, to reduce waste sent to the landfill.
County officials have discussed creating a materials recovery facility, or MRF, MRF, for years. Consultant Peter Engel told the Monroe County Solid Waste Management Board last week other options may be more viable. Engel is the lead consultant with Kessler Consulting and has been conducting a feasibility study on this issue since April 2017. Engel pointed to the fact that a materials recovery facility would require collaboration with other entities to be cost-effective. Engel also said there are also limitations presented by the county's existing contract with Hoosier Disposal as well as by state law.
Handling your source-segregated materials is much more within the district's control. So if I was to say a directional, I'd be moving towards, okay, I've got four options here. I'm going to go towards maybe some further looking down the path of an IPF and a composting facility. Now, also important to note that an IPF is more than what you got now. It's having more kind of equipment to process materials and consolidate it and store it for long enough and then be able to, you know, hopefully ship truckload quantity in order to get transportation efficiencies and to get it to market.
Of the four types of waste processing technologies Kessler studied for the Solid Waste Management Board, the Intermediate Processing Facility, or IPF, may be the most advantageous. For one, it accepts source-separated recyclables.
The thing we want to highlight here is that IPFs are relatively scalable, and they typically handle less than 10,000 tons a year. Now, you can have one that's handling a very small amount, but, you know, you're going to be holding material for a really long period of time. It's kind of nice that you have a relative amount of, you know, volume of material coming through so you can consolidate, get to truckload quantity, and get transportation efficiencies. IPFs, however, tend to be smaller. If you have a lot of material, you in like for a county, we've worked in other places where they have segregated materials and they have multiple points where they process and bale, and then they aggregate from those. So it's kind of like a milk run before they transport. A MRF, they really don't get designed for less than 10 tons per hour. That translates to around 15,000 to 18,000 tons a year of recyclable materials. So the reason that they kind of have this minimum threshold is because they cost money. The equipment that goes into them costs money. And so you have an economy of scale before they could become economically viable. You just have to be of a certain size.
Cost is also a factor. Assuming a facility opens in 2020, Engel projects that capital costs for an IPF would cost less than $5 million. That's compared to $40 million for a mixed waste facility and $10 million for a single stream MRF. Engel says an IPF also features the lowest operating costs of the four systems.
An IPF can be quite low cost per ton, and it's not so dependent upon, you know, how much material is flowing through it, because you can design it much more to the scale. A MRF is going to be a little bit more wide in this sense, because our scenarios did say you build a MRF, and in order to meet that minimum capacity, the critical issue is whether or not you get other tonnage coming in there. If it's really just floating on the district, then it gets really expensive. If you have city and university tonnage also coming into a district MRF, then the cost gets a little bit more towards the medium or the lower range here. And if you start getting other kind of what I would call merchant tonnage, which is private tonnage coming into that facility, then the cost per ton can go down even further.
Monroe County generates 118,000 tons of garbage per year. Engel says two-thirds of that waste stream is readily compostable or recyclable material. Consultants estimate the county currently captures less than 10% of those materials. The Solid Waste Management District Board took no immediate action on the report. The board will meet again on April 12th.
In state news, the Department of Natural Resources public comment period for 22 proposed rule changes closed March 16th. Among the proposed changes, the DNR is considering a measure that would force animal control to euthanize captured raccoons, possums, and coyotes. Previously, the DNR allowed pest control workers to release captured wildlife in a remote location. The new rules would also allow for the creation of a bobcat hunting season. Three native Indiana bats, little brown bats, tricolored bats, and northern long-eared bats are slotted to be added to the endangered species list due to severe population decline over the past 10 years. Conversely, seven invertebrate species will be removed from the endangered species list. All seven are types of mussels now considered extinct in the state of Indiana.
And a study published on March 19th in the journal Nature Climate Change found that decreasing carbon emissions across the globe could save 150 million lives. According to Drew Schindel, the study's lead author, air pollution is a large killer in the U.S., where 300,000 lives, mostly in major cities, are attributed to harmful emissions. The greatest benefit of decreasing carbon emissions would go to Asian countries with dirty air. 13 million people would be saved in large Indian cities alone. Dhaka, Bangladesh would experience 3.6 million fewer deaths, and Jakarta, Indonesia would experience 1.6 million fewer. Lagos, Nigeria, and Cairo, Egypt would save 2 million fewer deaths. For WFHB, I'm Glenn Leitner.
And I'm Linda Leitner. We love to hear from our listeners, especially during Fund Drive. Contact us about stories we've aired. If you have ideas for future stories, or if you'd like to share what EcoReport and WFHB mean to you, you can send emails to earth@wfhb.org or call the station at 812-323-1200.
Hi, this is Rebecca Mueller. I'm the producer of EcoReport, and I'm here speaking to you today from our fire station here at WFHB. Happy to be here. It's fun drive, as you all know. I'm sitting here with one of our volunteers from one of the shows that is probably most connected to EcoReport, and that's the Brown County Hour. This is Dave Seastrom.
Howdy.
Thanks for being here, Dave.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for inviting me.
Great. So we thought it'd be cool to speak to you together today. We're asking for your support, as you know, for our station and the work that we do. We're all volunteers. We're all passionate folks. EcoReport is one of the ways that you can really engage with what's happening here in our community, in our listening area. And Brown County is one of our counties that we cover. And Dave's show really looks at that. So maybe you want to tell us a bit about your show for the EcoReport fans who haven't listened.
Well, in fact, we had the pleasure of having you on the air last night live, helping us pitch for the Brown County Hour. Now, the Brown County Hour is something that just sort of organically happened along with the translator that allowed most of us in Brown County to receive the signal. And, you know, the show has evolved over time. We've been on the air for 10 years now, which is just amazing. Oh, excuse me, 8 years. I take that back. But even that's amazing. So we try to represent the voice of Brown County. And one of the central things that is Brown County is the forest. You know, Brown County is the most forested county in the entire state. And we have the most public land of any county in the state. Which we all love that, but it kind of keeps us impoverished because none of these places pay taxes. So, but there's been huge issues surrounding the state forest management, and we have our little show has interviewed several people who are principal players in this matter, and so that's our cross pollination there, Rebecca, and we appreciate everything that you guys do in support of that. And if you appreciate WFHB, this is your opportunity to go to the phones and dial 812-323-1200. And we've got a little glitch going on with our website. So if you go to donate.wfhb.org, you get a direct link to our secure website. And, you know, we come to you twice a year. We need these funds in order to keep the station functioning. And, you know, shows, information shows, and the music and all of these things, well, EcoReport falls right at the top of that list. I mean, folks, if we don't have an ecology, nothing else matters. All bets are off.
Right. That's an important foundation for our communities, for sure. So we have a couple of folks and organizations to thank. We have our catcher Jan Walker, who also works on EcoReport. She is waiting for your calls. We already have two calls. We have a goal of six for this hour, so please give us a call. I want to give a shout out to my colleague Mitchell Toplitsky. Thanks so much for your support. I believe Mitch left a message something to the effect of, "You must donate. Rebecca will strong arm you." So here I am, strong arming you. Please call in. Let us know what EcoReport or your favorite, you know, if we're not your favorite, we're no hard feelings. You can call in to whatever show or whatever program here speaks to you. I also want to thank David Lyman, who is a fellow EcoReporter. He reads the news for us. He does a lot here at the station himself, and he's donating because he loves EcoReport and he loves to listen to Blues Monday. He wants to give a special recognition to Dan Withard, who is another volunteer here. So, you know, we're all a family here at WFHB. We're a community. I'm here speaking to you. This is a station and a program that is for me and for you, and it's ours together. So please show us some support today. We really appreciate any call, anything you can give. We want to hear from you. Our number here is 812-323-1200. That's 812-323-1200, and Jen can take your call anytime.
Are you looking for a way to take action on environmental issues? EcoReport is seeking volunteer reporters to contribute local and regional news headlines as well as feature interviews. We provide all the technical training you'll need. WFHB also offers internships. Give us a call at 812-323-1200 or email us at earth@wfhb.org. This week in our listening area, hike to the lake that never was at Brown County State Park on Saturday, March 31st from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Journey off trail to this hidden spot within Brown County State Park. Meet at the Nature Center to carpool to the trailhead. The hike will be rugged over a 3-mile trek through several creeks. Dress and pack accordingly. Bring a sack lunch and plenty of water.
IU Professor Jeff White will give this year's Distinguished Faculty Research Lecture on Monday, April 2nd from 3 to 4:30 p.m. at the IU Cinema at 1213 East 7th Street in Bloomington. He will speak on his research of the warming Arctic climate.
Learn to identify wild edibles on a 1-mile hike around Leonard Springs Nature Park that includes views of caves, wetlands, and waterfalls. Wear comfortable shoes and bring a water bottle. The hike takes place on Saturday, April 7th, from 1 to 2:30 p.m. Please register by April 2nd on the Bloomington Parks and Recreation website.
There will be a backyard conservation program on Saturday, April 7th, from 3 to 4 p.m. at Bryan Park's Woodland Shelter in Bloomington. The program is great for everyone with an interest in toads and amphibians or conservation of any animal. Toads are unique animals that can be identified by their chirping, just like frogs. Please register by April 1st at the Bloomington Parks and Recreation website.
Join Hiking for Health on a fitness hike at the Pate Hollow Trail on Sunday, April 8th from 2 to 4 p.m. The hike is a 4-mile trail loop at a moderate pace. The trail is hilly, so be sure to wear appropriate shoes and bring a water bottle. The Pate Hollow Trailhead is located before the Pay Gate at the Paynetown State Recreation Area south of Bloomington off of State Route 446.
There's no shortage of hiking here locally. That's why EcoReport is proud to bring you Get Out and Hike, showcasing the wonderful wild areas of southern Indiana and beyond.
This is Get Out and Hike, and I'm Jan Walker.
Hi, this is Kathy Meyer. I'm a naturalist at Monroe County Parks and Recreation, and I'd like to tell you about some of the more primitive trails at Flatwoods Park. Flatwoods Park is located just west of Ellettsville, about a mile off of Highway 46. You'll come to a parking area by playground shelters and restroom facilities, water in the spring, won't be on now. And from there you can access several trails. There is a trail system of posts with colored arrows designating the different trail loops. The whole park is about 200 acres and it's about a mile from one end to the other. So if you like to get a little more walking in but still be on pretty flat ground, you can come out here and get some exercise. In the winter, if there's snow, it's a great place to try out your cross-country skis too, because you don't have any hills to go up and down. The trails mostly go around the edges of former agricultural fields. Before the county purchased this land for park use, it had been a hog farm, and there were corn and soybeans grown on several of the fields, and we've followed the edges of those fields to connect several of the trails. The Hoosier Hikers Council also constructed a trail for us a couple years ago that goes along the eastern property boundary and goes through a whole wooded area. This trail is very little used, but it's very interesting because it follows some little intermittent streams. It goes through a grove of old cedar trees. Several years ago, we had long-eared owls overwintering there that were found on the Christmas bird count. And then you can come out and come back on one of the other trails that follows the old fields and see all the birds that use the grassland areas out there. In winter, it's an especially good place to look for short-eared owls. We get reports every year of the short-eared owls coming out at dusk to hunt. And there's a good variety of sparrows and other birds there all year round, as well as other wildlife.
You mentioned some of the owls that used to be there in a bird count. Is there a website where they can go so people maybe could participate in these kind of things?
Well, for participating in bird counts, the best place to look locally would be the Sassafras Audubon Society website. We do have basic information about the park at the Monroe County Parks website, which is mcparksandrec.org. And you can find a map of the park and details about some of the facilities there.
This is Rebecca Mueller. I'm the producer of Eco Report. Happy to be speaking to you today and hoping for your support. We have a lot of volunteer power this week, especially a lot of folks in and out of the station. So many people care about WFHB. So many people want to keep the shop running here and keep talking to you, keep playing music for you, keep bringing you local news. So we thank you. So we have reached 3 out of our 6 donations we're hoping to get this half-hour show. Thank you so much to Donna Barbrick, who donated online. If you want to follow suit, you can go to wfhb.org. And our website's experiencing some technical difficulties, so that donate button is going to be front and center. You'll see what I mean. Got to go to the website, check it out. And I'm sitting here with Dave Seastrom, who is fellow volunteer at the station. He works on the Brown County Hour, and Eco Report and Brown County Hour have so much in common. You know, here at Eco, we love to cover the stories about what's happening in Brown County with forests specifically. We're always updating you on that. We had live coverage of the recent Yellowwood lumber auction where news director Wes Martin was on it. We cover things live when we can. We really want to get that information to you. And Dave, we just listened to Get Out and Hike. Now, there's no shortage of hiking trails in Brown County, is there?
No, and actually miles and miles of them in the state forest. And I'm not just a volunteer for WFHB, although that is dear to my heart. I'm also a member of a little group of people that we've organized called the Wild Tecumseh Friends, or as we like to call it, the WTF. And essentially, our group is focused on protecting the Tecumseh Trail. Now, this is a 40-mile hiking trail that is nationally known, and it's being decimated by the logging that's taking place in the state forest. But this year, we got farther than we've ever been before in the path of legislation that would preserve some of our state forests. There was a bill introduced by Senator Bassler, called SB 275, that was co-authored by 12 state senators. That's 25% of the entire state Senate. And even so, it could not get a hearing in committee. So in response to that, local representative Matt Pierce introduced an amendment to HB 1292, which was an omnibus bill written by Senator Eberhardt that would preserve 10% of the state forest. This is the first time a bill has been debated that would actually preserve some of our state forests, and we achieved a 41% favorable vote, in spite of the fact that the governor came out against this amendment. Well, we didn't actually save any forest, but we got farther than we've ever gotten, and this is positive news because we are not going away, and I sincerely believe we will win this. So if this kind of information is something that you're interested in, this is your perfect opportunity to go to the phones and dial 812-323-1200 or to our website at wfhb.org. There's just so much that WFHB offers, and this type of informational programming, along with the great music and the award-winning news, I mean, it's all part of what WFHB is, and you are WFHB.
Thanks, Dave. Help us meet our goal.
This is In Nature.
We
have to turn the mic way up in order to pick up this sound, but it's the echolocation signal of the Indiana bat. Indiana bats live in hardwood forests and hardwood pine forests. It is common in old growth forests as well as agricultural land like croplands and old fields. Overall, the bats mostly live in forest, crop fields, and grasslands. As an insectivore, the bat will eat both terrestrial and aquatic flying insects like moths, beetles, and mosquitoes and midges. The Indiana bat spends summer months living throughout the eastern United States. During winter, however, they cluster together and hibernate in only a few caves. Since about 1975, the population of Indiana bats has declined by about 50%. Based upon the 1985 census of hibernating bats, the Indiana bat population was estimated at 244,000. About 23% of the bats hibernated in caves in Indiana. The Indiana bat lives in caves only in winter, but there are few caves that provide the conditions necessary for hibernation. Stable, low temperatures are required to allow the bats to reduce their metabolic rates and conserve fat reserves. These bats hibernate in large, tight clusters, which contain a few thousand individuals.
You've been listening to In Nature.
And that wraps up our show for this week. Eco Report is brought to you in part by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
This week's news stories were written by Sarah Vaughn, Wes Martin, Jonah Chester, and Linda Green. Jan Walker produced Get Out and Hike, and Cindy Bollet edited the segment. Julianne Daly compiled our events calendar.
Kirsten Payton is our engineer and audio editor. Andrew Brown edited the script. Producer is Rebecca Mueller. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Glenn Leitner.
And I'm Linda Leitner. Join us on Thursdays at 11:30 a.m. after Making Contact, and Fridays at 5 p.m. following the afternoon music mix for our weekly radio rundown of ecological news. You can also access headline news, feature audio, and our Get Out and Hike episode archive anytime on the WFHB website.
You've been listening to the Eco Report,
a volunteer-powered production of Community Radio WFHB
in Bloomington, Indiana.
Available for download and podcast at news.wfhb.org.
Eco Report is your independent, ecologically inspired news source
for South Central Indiana,
bringing you news that the Earth wants you to hear.
Send your comments, suggestions, and story ideas
directly to the Eco Report staff.
The email address is
earth@wfhb.org.
That's earth@wfhb.org.